GreenSense is brought to you by JLT Specialty USA, the world's largest energy insurance broker, serving the entire energy continuum. Visit jltus.com.
Welcome to GreenSense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Thanks for joining us. I'm an environmental entrepreneur and founded GreenSense, so I get the honor to serve as your host.
And I'm Bob Kessler, executive producer. So how's the wind power industry doing on its latest report card when it comes to power it generates, cost, and most importantly, jobs? Also, the U.S. might have ditched the Paris Climate Agreement several weeks ago, but is all hope lost on America being a leader on climate change?
All those answers are coming up on this week's edition of GreenSense. Wind energy costs less, has seen numerous technological improvements, and has the potential to generate even more energy than before. This is all covered in a new report by the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, and we're joined by its lead author, Ryan Weiser. Ryan, welcome to GreenSense.
Thank you very much.
Your report says prices offered by newly built wind projects in the United States are averaging around 2 cents per kilowatt hour. Wow, that's cheap. Put that number in context. How much of an improvement is that? And how does that compare to electricity generated by coal-fired power plants?
Well, about 10 years or so ago, wind energy tended to be delivered in the United States for around 7 U.S. cents per kilowatt hour. Now that price is just hovering right around that 2 cent per kilowatt hour threshold. So we certainly have seen very significant declines in the price of wind energy as purchased by electric utilities, as well as a growing number of corporate customers. In comparison to coal and natural gas, two of the core competitors for wind energy, coal and natural gas for new power plants might cost somewhere on the order of 5 to 8 cents per kilowatt hour. However, the operating cost of those plants once built is also around that sort of 3 cent per kilowatt hour threshold.
So most of us in the U.S. are paying between 7 to 15 cents a kilowatt hour for our electricity. With those low cost of production, what adds on to all that other cost? So by the time it gets to the consumer, it's up to those higher rates.
A lot of it's delivery. You've got to move that power from where it is located, in the case of wind, in windy parts of the country, to cities and other load centers. And so you've got transmission expenditure, you've got distribution lines that come into your neighborhood, and of course you have the utilities overhead costs as well.
With wind, are we able to get our power source closer to the consumer? Or do you still have long transmission lines?
You typically have long-distance transmission, and in fact, wind energy is, because it's location-dependent, it is located where the wind is best, or at least it tends to be. Wind requires, in fact, perhaps a bit more transmission than some other generation sources that can be located a little bit more closely to load centers.
Well, your report also shows that bigger wind turbines are making a bigger difference. How much bigger are the new wind turbines, and what are the advantages to a bigger wind turbine?
Well, just to give you a sense of scale here, a typical turbine installed today will be at about 80 meters, and the rotor diameter will be about 100 meters. So these are turbines that stand almost a full football field in height and that have a football field's worth of blades attached to them. These are just gigantic machines. And it improves the performance substantially, being able to access higher quality wind resource at higher elevation, and then capturing more of that energy with those very large blades.
I'm Robert Colangelo, and my guest is Ryan Weiser, who is the lead author of a new study on the wind industry. And we're talking about the efficacy of this renewable energy source and a recent report they've done on this. Let's talk a little bit about the economics. So bigger, we think, will cost more. Is that true? Or are these bigger wind turbines cheaper to build?
So far, bigger is better in the case of wind energy. You capture more energy, lower construction costs per unit of energy as well. And so one of the core reasons that the price of wind energy has declined over the last decade is because of the increasing size of these machines.
So let's go back to that economic question I asked earlier. If you're producing power through wind generation at 2 cents a kilowatt hour, what would the consumer ultimately pay for that?
You know, it's important when you compare different energy generation sources to recognize that they have different purposes in the energy system. Wind energy is only available when the wind is blowing, and so you need other thermal power plants available to fill in the gaps. And so that's an important point to recognize here, that it's not fair to simply compare one resource versus another just based on its cost. You also have to look at its output profile. And so when you're looking at wind energy at 2 cents per kilowatt hour, you typically think of it as a fuel saver. It's saving fuel for the electric utility. And we've seen over the last several years with these 2 cent per kilowatt hour power purchase agreement prices, a growing number of utilities estimate that over the life of those projects that they're purchasing or owning, that they will save more in fuel in terms of natural gas and coal than the cost of wind energy. So in those cases, wind energy, in fact, is reducing retail electricity rates.
Well, that's a great example of putting it in perspective. What helped drop the cost of wind energy to such a low production rate?
Two core features. One, of course, technology advancement. And basically all of the technology advancements, scientific, engineering, manufacturing, logistics, transportation, and construction associated with being able to put in larger wind turbines at lower, progressively lower costs. So clearly technological advancements that relate to scale and size have been very important. It's also important to recognize, though, that wind energy benefits from federal tax support. The Federal Production Tax Credit, or PTC, drops the price of wind energy by around 2 cents per kilowatt hour. So even though the ultimate end user price today is 2 cents per kilowatt hour, in fact, the federal taxpayer, in effect, is capturing about a 2 cent cost as well for these particular projects.
The report you published was for 2016. Do you expect these trends to continue in 2017 and beyond, or have we hit a point of diminishing return in cost benefit?
Well, the industry has certainly matured, and with a maturing industry, you can anticipate that costs will begin to flatten out at some point in time. But certainly if you talk to wind developers, if you talk to wind equipment manufacturers, especially the turbine manufacturers, they will certainly tell you that they continue to be on the downward cost trajectory.
Our president is pushing for more coal industry jobs, and wind energy employs more than 100,000 people in the U.S., and it's surprising to see that coal only employs around 76,000. Will you see more people working in wind in the future?
Well, certainly as wind deploys progressively over the next several years, wind will require more employees to construct the power plants, more employees to operate the power plants as well.
And to do research and development and to write reports and study the industry too, right? So there's a lot of spin-off and a ripple effect to wind that goes beyond power production.
Right. I sure hope so, personally.
So any idea what full employment potential might look like in the wind industry?
You know, a couple of years ago, the Department of Energy published a report called the Wind Vision Report. And that report studied a scenario in which wind energy reached 20% of U.S. electricity supply in the 2030 timeframe, growing up to 35% of U.S. electricity supply by the 2050 timeframe. And we found in that scenario, and that's an aggressive scenario for sure. It's not a business as usual scenario. That's an aggressive scenario. But we found that at its peak, wind would require about 500,000 employees under that scenario.
Well, Ryan, it's always nice to hear positive reports on the renewable energy industry and to put it in perspective and how it's just part of a basket of goods that we're going to need to supply this nation's and the world's energy demand. I really enjoyed talking with you, and thank you for sharing your thoughts in the study.
Absolutely. Nice chatting with you as well.
That's Ryan Weiser, lead author of a new study on the wind industry in the U.S., published by the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. I'm Robert Colangelo. This is Green Sense. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play when you visit greensensefarms.com.
This is Bob Kessler, executive producer of GreenSense Radio. Every week, we cover environmental issues and meet passionate people and sustainable innovators. You might have noticed we do it with very few commercials. Our advertisers, they're just part of what supports GreenSense. We need the help of our listeners, also passionate people who care about the planet and know the value of independent media, which matters now more than ever. We've just launched our fundraising drive so you can help us continue to bring you informative and inspiring shows. Your contributions will cover our small production staff, which seeks out and schedules interviews, edits them, and puts together GreenSense every week. Plus, there's the cost of online hosting and studio equipment. So when you visit greensensefarms.com, click on Radio Show to make a contribution via Podbean. Takes just a few minutes, and as we often say on the program, individual actions multiplied by millions can yield big results. So if you're inspired by our positive and informative shows, we're asking you to help keep GreenSense going. Visit greensensefarms.com and click Radio Show to contribute to our fundraising drive via Podbean. On behalf of all of us at GreenSense Radio, thank you.
GreenSense is sponsored by JLT Specialty USA, experienced professionals ensuring energy, technology, and aerospace, serving complex risk with creative solutions. Visit usa.jlt.com.
President Trump announced that the U.S. will back out of the Paris Climate Agreement a few months ago. Since that time, we're learning more and more how businesses, state and local governments, and individuals are stepping up under their own volition to reduce carbon output. Joining us now is Diana Rojas, who wrote about this trend for Ethical Corporations Monthly magazine. Diana, welcome to Green Sense.
Thank you.
Well, it seems that the federal government backing out of the Paris Agreement has had a counterintuitive effect. The people, business, and government have risen to the challenge and have taken environmental action on their own. Do you have any concrete examples of individuals, businesses, local state governments that have made a commitment to climate change and carbon reduction as a result of the U.S. backing out of the Paris Accord?
Well, yeah, within minutes of this happening, you had state and local governments, as well as some non-governmental organizations starting this, we are still in, let's call it a hashtag, I don't know what it is, but it was an organization, it's a loose organization of groups that are saying, are you kidding? We're still going to do this. And in some ways, people have doubled down on efforts that were already underway. New York, California, they already had climate mitigation efforts underway, but now it's almost like we're going to do this. We're going to show everybody. So that was very interesting.
It's always great when the people lead and the politicians follow. So have you gotten a sense of why businesses are committing to this agreement?
Oh, never underestimate the power of profit. You know, there's a couple reasons. A lot of them have started this because they thought that, because they were told that there was going to be legislation that they had to do this. The Clean Power Act definitely required a lot of businesses. But in doing so, a lot of businesses found that they're saving money on energy and on sustainability issues. And millennials, every time I talk to a business, they bring up millennials and how millennials aren't going to buy stuff from a company that they don't agree with. And millennials aren't going to work for companies whose policies they don't agree with. So there is a huge marketing impact in saying, well, we're going to be net zero energy, or we're going to make sure that we have sustainable business practices. A lot of it is about the bottom line. But that's the way capitalism works.
How much of it is that they've already have programs going and they don't want to stop them?
You know, I couldn't say scientifically, but anecdotally, talking to companies, a lot of it is that they have these programs going, but in doing the programs, they realize, wow, look at this. We're going to save a lot of money. So why stop that?
Well, those are all interesting points. And as we discussed earlier, you wrote an article that just hours after the president pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreement, California, Washington, and New York announced they would form an alliance to honor U.S. commitments to CO2 emissions, cutting them 26% below the 205 levels by 2025. We have more than 200 cities making similar commitments. What's behind the commitment at this local level of government? Is it voters? Is it other reasons? Is it saving money?
Both. It's voters and it's saving money. They formed the U.S. Climate Alliance, and that represents about a quarter of the U.S. population. But more importantly, it represents about a third of the GDP. I mean, just California alone is, what, a sixth of the GDP? We're talking a lot of voters there. And the Trump administration backed out of this. That didn't necessarily mean that American voters were not interested in climate change mitigation. So the cities had already set up programs. This was full speed ahead, and the voters liked it.
Robert Colangelo here on Green Sense, and I'm talking with Diana Rojas about how the U.S. pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord has caused individuals, businesses, and local governments to lead on carbon reduction. Diana, the Paris Climate Agreement is a volunteer agreement, and it's really more symbolic as a gesture among world leaders, recognizing that pollution and climate do not recognize geopolitical boundaries, and we must unite to solve the challenge. Have some other governments gone beyond the climate agreement and are committing to do more than it calls for?
Well, you know, there was a big fear that the U.S. pulling out would give cover to other countries to abandon it or to, and let me put this in air quotes, cheat on their own commitments. But the opposite has happened. The countries, you know, the climate agreement, you're right, it's a loose agreement, but there's a lot of peer pressure behind it. So it's almost as if the other countries have ganged up on America and said, you know what, you can't play anymore, but we're going to continue in the game. And have they doubled down? Well, yes, in almost a we're going to show you attitude. There's, you know, the big emitters, China, India, Europe. Those countries are really committed to stopping this. Some reasons, like China, it's economics. They, you know, they have to get a handle on their energy. Also India. But this is really when the U.S. stepped back on its leadership, these countries are coming in to fill the void. Now they get to be the stars.
And that's interesting because the U.S. has always been a leader when it came to environmental issues. Mm-hmm. And now that we've backed out of the agreement, we're not leading the world anymore on climate change and environmental issues.
No, we're keeping company with North Korea.
Right.
Seriously.
Yeah.
And Nicaragua, but Nicaragua backed out because it didn't go far enough for them. So they're in a whole different league. It's just us in North Korea.
So with the U.S. backing out, do you see that the net effort increasing as other countries have picked up, or is there going to be a net loss?
I don't think there's going to be a net loss. That's not the sense I got from the people I spoke to. There is a lot of hope that the U.S., that the businesses and states, by taking up the mantle of climate change mitigation, they will be able to meet the U.S.'s goals. The big mystery is, what does the rollback of the Clean Power Act do? That's a big one for the United States, because the Clean Power Act was going to really be instrumental in lowering our emissions. Now, it's not instant. In the Trump administration saying, we're going to roll this back, it doesn't mean that all these changes happen instantly. Ditto with the Paris Climate Agreement. They have to pull back slowly. So saying they're not in doesn't mean we're not in. It just means we're going to start pulling out. But ironically, all of these changes become cemented after the Trump administration is over in 4 years. So,
yeah, so we'll have to keep an eye on this. Yeah, the soundbite that we get from the media doesn't always tell the whole story, and it's just interesting the backlash that this has created. Tell us a little bit about Ethical Corporations Monthly Magazine. Who is that written for and who reads it?
Well, Ethical Corporations Monthly Magazine is written for its subscribers, and its subscribers include individuals who are interested in sustainability issues. It also includes the corporations and the organizations that are moving towards creating a more sustainable world.
And in your experience, how would you rate corporations? At once they were looked at as the bad guys, but these days, are they improving their sustainability record?
Yes, they really are. You know, in this article, talking to people here and talking to people in other articles, the investors are becoming much more active. Buyers, customers are becoming much more active. We want to know where our money is going towards. It's not enough to buy a cool pair of sneakers. We want to make sure that Little Fingers didn't make those sneakers and go blind doing so. So it's you know, like I said, it's all about profits in the end. But profits motivate people to open their eyes and open their hearts and see, hey, what's good for me needs to be good for other people too.
And that's my feeling too. I'm not so worried about why they do it as long as we get positive results out there.
Right. So,
well, thanks for joining us on GreenSense, and thanks for writing that article.
Thanks for having me.
Diana Rojas with Ethical Corporations Monthly Magazine, telling us about the Paris Climate Agreement and how governments and businesses are taking initiative on their own. I'm Robert Colangelo. This is GreenSense. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play when you visit greensensefarms.com. Thanks for listening to this week's show. Support our Podbean patron drive. Just visit the Green Sense Farm website and click the Be My Patron button. Your contribution supports independent media, and it'll pay for quality programming so we can continue to bring you great guests. Bob, what are we going to learn next week?
They're used to deliver packages from Amazon from time to time. They're used in warfare. Hobbyists like them. Film and TV crews get some really great shots with them. But these things are helping us monitor, observe, and learn more about climate change.
Visit greensensefarms.com to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And you can check out the list of radio stations that are our show. I want you to stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
GreenSense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan at GreenSense Farms, the largest indoor commercial vertical farm in the world. We walk the walk and talk the talk, growing leafy green vegetables 24/7, free of pesticides, herbicides, with non-GMO seeds, conserving resources, and reducing waste. Watch us grow. The program is copyright GreenSense Farms, all rights reserved.
GreenSense is brought to you by JLT Specialty USA, the world's largest energy insurance broker, serving the entire energy continuum. Visit jltus.com.